welcome to another episode of the Touring Rabbit Holes podcast. Today's episode is all about predicting the future in a chaotic world and what are the practical limits of computer modeling with predicting real life events. What can we know? Can they work as crystal balls? We're going to talk about a lot of examples in history and a lot of ideas about how we can continue to improve computer modeling. Alex, will you talk to us about what inspired the paper that you wrote that inspired this episode?
So one of the things I've been most interested in my life is where are the limits of predictability? Mm-hmm. You know, we always see science fiction films of computers outperforming humans at nation state war games and at all levels of, you know, of war games. And I'm wondering, can this be well defined mathematically?
Yeah.
And what can we do to maximize our predictability or machine predictability?
Yeah, this is a fabulous question. This almost falls along the lines of talking about science fiction and the actual differences between science fiction and reality. One of the interesting things that people often say about sci-fi is it's only a matter of time. And we know that in so many science fiction books and movies, as you just said, there are very powerful computers, such as in the anime Evangelion. There's three computers called the Magi. Actually, they're named after the wise man. And how many other series have a computer like that? Like
There's many. This was an accident, probably waiting to happen. I have a pile of books, and I decided to start reviewing them.
Yeah.
Because I'm finishing up creating all my physics notes, and I started leafing through it, and this is co-authored by a Nobel Prize winning Russian, Prigogine, who has a book on complexity and one chapter on human complexity and how that can be modeled, and it finally closed the loop of what we're going to be talking about. And he begins with a very simple situation where he says, okay, I'm going to have two populations, and I'll show this on the screen, X sub A and X sub B, and then they have two different choices that they like with different levels of attractability, and then he sets up these balance equations very much like a chemist would, very much like water's H2O, but when you in a glass, you know some of it's dissolving into OH and some of it's dissolving into H, and it's in equilibrium, right? It's mostly water, but a few of them dissolve into their ions, and it's an equilibrium balance.
Yes.
And so he sets up these equilibrium balance equations for two populations, and it's they're very predictable. What he then says is, let's switch it up to K, and let's generalize the differential equations to K populations with K different states and K preferences. And he shows in his paper, that in his book, that the system is now very sensitive to initial conditions, very sensitive to chaos, and it just becomes completely unpredictable.
Yes.
Okay, so that's the starting point is human societies are completely unpredictable. And he says if you look at any piece of history and you think that maybe it's central planners that organized it and, you know, we're trying to optimize a global function, like everyone have a certain minimum wealth, he says, forget about it. That's just a run in history that could have happened any other way.
Yes.
Like, why is the United States the dominant power? Mm-hmm. It could have been anything else in history.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what I do then is I contrast that. It caught my attention, his representation of humanity as these systems of differential equations, because there are very similar differential equations that model proteins. Gene networks that make proteins.
Yeah.
They are first order couple differential equations, and they're all connected to each other. If this enzyme and that protein are at this level, then this gets activated.
Yeah.
And so very similar looking differential equations, except ours, the ones in our bodies, are homeostatic. They return back to equilibrium, whereas the human ones, our societies, explode into chaos.
Yeah. Now, of course, with every episode of the Touring Rabbit Holes podcast, there is an accompanying paper. I'll have the link in the comments of this YouTube video, as well as our audio-only podcast. For those joining us on the audio part, the link to the paper will will be in the show notes. And the paper is called The Physics and Machine Learning of Unpredictable Metahumanity. What a mouthful there. What a mouthful. There's a lot of visuals as well. A lot of diagrams that are quite helpful. Also, we're going to try to keep this particular episode roughly 25 minutes or so. Mm-hmm. So that means that if there are five parts, I didn't count how many parts there were.
Well, that's okay. We'll get to it.
If there's five parts, then we'll do about 5 minutes per section. Okay. So
moving on is my favorite historian, mathematical historian. Okay. He's a PhD in entomology who switched over to history. And he built statistical models of periods that are well documented, like mm-hmm. from the fall of the Roman Empire, the Catholic Church kept decent records till the Industrial Revolution.
Yes.
And he's got a model about how big you are means how big an army you can hold, which means how much you can expand of Europe mm-hmm. from, like I said, the fall of Rome to 1800.
Yes.
And so he builds these models that are statistical and coupled to differential equations, and he runs them, and what these models come up with, how the world would look like in 1800.
Okay.
And it clearly says that Spain should be its own chunk, and that France and Germany and the UK, it figures this out statistically mm-hmm. from the records.
Okay.
And that is as good as these models get. And obviously, pre-industrial revolution from the fall of Rome, didn't change, right?
Mm-hmm, correct.
Farming and horses, nothing much changed. And then we started getting steam power and electricity and communications through teletypes.
Yes.
So his models are already useless once modern technology begins to kick in. So that's a good limiting case if we're going to model a primitive societies.
Yes.
The word, pseudo-modern, right?
Yes.
How predictable they can get in a statistical sense. Mm-hmm. Then going back to Prigogine, I found a paper with a very specific model that's already pretty sophisticated.
Okay.
It splits up the world into two kinds of people,
okay.
commoners,
yes.
workers, and elite, the managers.
Okay. So real quick, I want to make sure I understand this model. So the generalizations, as you said, commoners, elite, and I'm sorry, what was it?
The elite, the wealthy.
Okay. Sure, okay.
And so there's two populations.
Yes.
And the model is going to take into account the birth and death rate of both of these populations.
Okay.
It's going to take into account the fact that nature replenishes itself. If we chop down wood, mm-hmm. trees grow back.
Okay.
It's going to take into account that we deplete certain things like oil.
Okay.
It's going to have a model for wealth.
Okay.
And how the wealth is affected by the death rates and everything I just put in. So mm-hmm. it's four coupled differential equations.
Okay.
And I'll cut to graphics. It has, that paper shows at least 20 different cases. I cut out and presented two. Mm-hmm. One is where you start off, you set those parameters, initial populations and death rates, you set them randomly. Mm-hmm. And then maybe you have a little forethought and you let the computer run. Mm-hmm. And it shows that there's an oscillatory behavior mm-hmm. that, and it eventually reaches equilibrium.
Okay,
There is a steady population of workers and a steady population of elites mm-hmm. and a steady consumption of nature, and everything's at equilibrium.
Okay, yeah.
You play with the parameters, and now you got a state of boom and bust.
Yes.
Everything goes gangbusters like the 1920s, mm-hmm. and then you have a stock market crash. And, mm-hmm. and you know that since we've had stock markets, we've had boom times and bust times and
yes.
boom times, and so that might, so this model contains that possibility.
Okay.
And social planners are trying to figure out how not to cause it. Busts are really bad on people.
Yes.
And
yes.
so but this equation, what's interesting to me is that the part of the equation that models how nature replenishes itself is mm-hmm. a logistic equation.
Mm-hmm.
It is the Fibonacci sequence equation, how bunny rabbits reproduce.
Yes.
And just looking at that equation, how you have a stable bunny rabbit population as you play with the reproduction rate,
mm-hmm.
and it's just one population year after year after year, mm-hmm. and when you hit a certain reproduction rate,
yes.
you get high and low.
Mm-hmm.
So this year high, next year low. This year high, next year low.
Oh, yeah.
And then you keep playing with the parameter and you get, you got four states.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, one, two, three, four. And how it visits these four populations year to year is stochastic.
Yes.
So it can be here, 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 and here. And you just go, you keep playing with the parameter. And now the number of states doubles again.
Yes.
And then it starts doubling at a chaotic rate where you just have a soup of possible states.
Yes.
that logistic equation is buried into the model that we're talking about.
Okay.
So it's very possible that we have complete chaos going.
Wow.
You know, right? So these are telling me, you know, what's the limit of predictability given yes. how chaotic the underlying differential equations are?
Okay. Now, I know that with weather, I've heard of the absolute limit, no matter what, no matter how sophisticated our satellite systems are, no matter how many we have throughout the country, even if there's a satellite system every block, the absolute limit is about 2 weeks of predictability. Is that right?
And yeah, that's interesting. And Santa Fe Institute here, about 50 miles north of us, has been doing some work with machine learning mm-hmm. on chaotic systems like weather.
Okay.
And they have hit the maximum limit. I think they've shown mathematically that it's about 5 to 10 Lyapunov exponents. And that's the cigarette smoke being smooth and yeah. going to turning turbulent.
Okay.
And they can go about 5 units to 10 units forward in time.
Oh, okay.
And then that's it.
Okay.
No matter how advanced your brain is, no matter how godlike you are in technology, that's
yeah.
it.
Yeah. That's the limit of knowability. And because chaos is an integral part of our universe. So
error builds up too fast.
Yeah. Okay.
Uncertainty builds up too fast.
It's almost like then there is no omniscience isn't a thing that could exist.
And that's something that goes back to the Renaissance period. They were figuring out how sensitive things were to initial conditions.
Yeah.
So the God is a clock, you know, clockwork master.
Okay. I guess my question is then, knowing that, what does that have to say about these attempts at modeling here?
Well, so we've seen the unpredictability side. Now let me flip it over to the predictability side.
Okay. Sure.
And if you think about it, brain scientists are beginning to put together something called the brain connectome, the human genome, like the brain connectome.
Okay.
And so they're using sophisticated imaging technologies, MRIs and PET, positron electron tomography, mm-hmm. to begin to figure out the networks.
Yes.
And you know from brain surgeries that people can poke and stimulate here at random. You go, oh, I smell, you know, apple pie, or I see a movie. And so clearly we're networked, and clearly we've mapped what parts of our brain talk to our fingers and different parts of our bodies or different mental concepts.
Yes.
So there's clearly a network, and we're beginning to refine this, and this is using algebraic topology as the math and the technology to build this. And papers are saying we have 11 dimensional networks.
Wow.
So the first thing I would say is someone's going to ask me, wait a minute, don't we live in a four-dimensional universe with space and time? How do we have 11 dimensional networks? Are we magical?
Yes.
No, it is just like a square is defined as having four vertices and four edges connecting them,
mm-hmm.
and a cube is defined as having 8 points and, you know, and edges connecting them.
Mm-hmm.
If we have the vertices and edges connected in such a way that is a hypercube, that I can project down into 3D space, then that is a four-dimensional network that's in our brain.
Yes.
And why not 11-dimensional? In that abstract Euclidean sense, we have. So that's the answer to that.
Okay.
Is that the vertices are connected in such a way that they are connected in the way they would be in a four-dimensional Euclidean space-time.
Okay.
In space. And so clearly I start making fun of about persistence.
Mm-hmm.
When I wake up, it's not a random wife. It's not random kids. It's not a random dog I let outside. It's not a random job that I go to. It's not a random grocery store. There are persistent networks.
Yes.
The city of Albuquerque is persistent. The city of New York is persistent. The Empire State and the Chrysler Building have not shifted randomly.
Correct.
Yeah, lots of other buildings have come and gone.
Okay.
And so I start, so that seems to be something countering the differential equations that are chaotic, is the fact that there's a persistence to us.
Yes.
There's a persistence in our life. We remember our past.
Okay. Yeah.
And I talk about that is giving us tools of predictability.
Yeah.
And including and to make this more explicit, there's a project called the WikiGalaxy Project, which shows how Wikipedia looks like as a galaxy in 3D. You can almost put on 3D goggles and float around WikiGalaxy, and that is a persistence of, you know, it's, if you search Isaac Newton in this tool, you go to a star that looks like Isaac Newton and you see these hairs and they're going to calculus, to physics, to the UK. They're not going to Ozzy Osbourne.
Yeah. Oh,
they can.
Yeah.
And in fact, in three steps, they've shown in three steps, everything's connected.
Wow.
But it's not nearly connected. And you have to be a weirdo kind of to connect the Isaac Newton with Ozzy Osbourne, I suppose.
Yes.
But, that is a persistence.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not as, it's almost as if Wikipedia has captured all of our history, all of our knowledge,
yeah,
and it's dumb in that sense, and in that it takes an expert like a historian to go, okay, if I'm going to use Wikipedia to teach, I'm going to use these links and these links, and I'm going to say, hey, student, go to here and here. Mm-hmm. It, you know, it takes us to add intelligence to Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. And I recently made an avatar of Einstein that does that.
Wow. Cool.
And you can talk to it. And the way I did it is I took about 2,000 sentences of Einstein, mm-hmm. childhood, wives, kids, time in Germany, World War II, thoughts about atomic bombs, thoughts mm-hmm. about, you know, and I created 100 text files roughly.
Yes.
And I put 100 chatbots, mm-hmm. one to each text file. And so the kiddo can come in and say, hey, Einstein, I thought you were a pacifist. Why were you for the atom bomb?
Yes.
And the chat, all that sentence is checked against all 100 chatbots, mm-hmm. and it looks at the chatbot with the best answer.
Wow.
And it comes back and it says, well, I was for the atom bomb, because he wrote that letter to President Roosevelt saying, yes, we got to start a Manhattan Project, because we really thought, mm-hmm. Based on our knowledge of Germany and German physics and their access to heavy water, we really thought Hitler was going to get the bomb first.
Yes.
After World War II, I became a pacifist.
Yep.
And so that's going to be the reply that comes back. And then I tell the chatbot, statistically, here's a bunch of sentences that he might have said additionally with a probability.
Oh, got it.
So you get a prob. So the user should never get the same repeat mm-hmm. experience.
Yeah.
And it'll say, oh, and by the way, I you know, here's my future thoughts. Here's how I thought about nuclear weapons afterwards. Mm-hmm. And then I'll go and grab statistically related Wikipedias. Mm-hmm. So you get this feel. Mm-hmm. You get a great run of sentences where you think you're talking to Einstein, and once in a while it gets repetitive, and it's not smart, it's not conscious,
yeah,
but it is a avatar representation, mm-hmm. and it is persistent.
Nice.
And I think about that. So penultimately, mm-hmm. I think about the kinds of networks out there,
yes,
and the kinds of behaviors out there. We get great world wars roughly every 100 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
We get regional conflicts roughly every 10 years. We get small problems happening every 10 years, 1 year, months. Mm-hmm. You know, the frequencies go up as the effects go down.
Yeah.
Earthquakes follow the same thing, but there's no underlying network connecting earthquakes on Earth. You know, we get a big one every 100 years, and niner, you know.
Okay.
And we get some 8 every year, and some mm-hmm. 7s, and some 6s, and some 5s, and then they follow a power laws. But the internet follows power laws in that you get, you know, every day you get a, you know, say every year you get an amazingly viral video of a cat,
mm-hmm.
actually,
yeah,
more often than that, right?
Yes.
And then, you know, viral videos that are 1/10 as popular, 1/100 as popular, and these are the things that, to me, allow world wars to happen, or the Arab Spring, where one man burned himself and mm-hmm. collapsed.
Yes,
all these Arab dictatorships, mm-hmm. and so now we're talking about the kinds of networks might teach us something about predictability,
mm-hmm.
and so the best tool that an Air Force colonel came up with is something called the OTA loop.
Okay,
it is observe, orient, decide, and act. And if you're playing tennis, you're always orienting yourself based on your opponent.
Mm-hmm.
You're observing, you're orienting. He looks like it's going to be a backhand, and you have choices. I can slice it, I can power it double-handed or single-hand power. You know, you can decide, and then you can act.
Yes.
Your opponent has an OTA loop. Everyone has an OTA loop.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is, if you can OTA loop faster, mm-hmm. you will break your opponent's OTA loop, and you will be able to win the fight.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been extended to corporations fighting over, you know, market space between, yes, nation states. And so the hypothesis that I've been coming to is, if we have topological, like Wikipedia's, everything's connected, like mm-hmm. our persistent brains of what's connected, if we marry topology to the OTA loop,
yes,
in AIs,
mm-hmm.
we are now probably getting our best tools for nation state or tennis players to try to be predictable and try to have a leverage or a way to win fights,
mm-hmm.
In a innately chaotic world. And this is, we'll see where we go, what the limits are.
Okay.
And I'm very excited by the fact that I get to do this research.
Interesting. Very cool. So, wow. A lot to say there. So, with, in summary, we know that, you know, it is a chaotic universe and there are models that have failed at certain times.
Right.
But then we know that we've tried to augment those models and account for certain things.
Right.
So it means that there is a practical limit to the ability to predict humanity and humanity's fate, but we just don't know what that limit is. Is that correct?
Well, let's talk about things like PC versus Mac.
Okay. Yeah.
There wasn't a PC or a Mac before, say, 1980.
Yes.
How did the distribution happen that we came to today? Was that could that possibly have been predictable? We knew that Moore's law was working. We knew that transistors were getting smaller. We knew that eventually computers would become practicable in your home, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't think anyone thought about how much the world has changed because the PC came out.
Yeah.
And I don't think they could have predicted. I mean, how many companies were in the PC business in the early days? I can remember Dell. Yeah. Yeah. Survived, Hewlett Packard, and dozens of other companies. How about the iPhone? How about the phone market? Android versus the iOS system?
Mm-hmm.
Who could have predicted that? I mean, theoretically, we knew that phones were being shrunk and that we were setting up networks.
Mm-hmm.
Who could have predicted?
Yeah,
I mean, there's so many things like. Could a computer that had taken in everything possible about every person and every CEO and every technology trend gone, hey, by the way, hey, in 2021, this is going to be the state of the world.
Okay.
And there's so many people loyal to iPhones and so many people loyal to Androids.
Mm-hmm.
That's impossible.
Yeah.
It could have gone any which way.
Wow.
Right?
Okay. Yeah. So a whole lot to think about.
But nation states, what do we compete at? Months, years? I don't know. We'll see how powerful a Skynet that's using topology and persistent networks can do to predict the future, right?
Yeah.
Hopefully we get rid of communism.
Yeah.
I don't know if we will.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Interesting.
And so that is a case I discuss. If your model is creating a master race, Uberman,
yes.
Then your differential equation is really trivial.
Yes.
Is zero for all the populations and a constant population for you.
Yeah. Wow.
So completely the opposite of the Vulcans, right?
Yep.
Infinite diversity and infinite complexity, or however they say it.
Yeah. I don't quite remember. So
I think innovation happens. So that's one of the points of the paper.
Okay.
That because we are chaotic, we have to figure things out innovatively, creatively, cooperatively. Mm-hmm. And it really helps when there's a lot of different people looking at the same problem different ways.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, absolutely. So interesting. So we are just barely over 20 minutes, I guess.
Wow, we actually managed to keep our promise.
Yeah, we did very well then. Is there anything we should say?
It'll all be on, I'll have the graphics spliced in, so
excellent.
So we'll be able to do that.
Yeah, so if you want to see all of this content in a paper, then please see the link in the show notes. Also, if you have any questions for Dr. Alanese, please send them to toingrabbitholespodcast@gmail.com. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Till next time.